Hello and welcome to another edition of your Triple Threat Podcast. Jabari Davis back here with you again, and of course I'll be joined by my guys Jameson Welsh and Jordan Buscarini for this week's discussion. We'll have a quick wrap-up of the finals before tackling some NBA draft and free agency topics. So let's go ahead and just jump right into it, guys. So basically, LeBron went full superhero mode over the last five games, putting up pretty much video game numbers in a couple of them, with the back-to-back 41-point performances, as well as doing everything else out there on the court. And in a game seven, he finished it off with a triple-double, obviously in a road win. Kyrie was also a key scorer. Hit some huge shots, especially that final one down the stretch. And Tristan Thompson was also key, especially once Bogut went down with an injury. So was this more of a matter of Golden State collapsing after going up 3-1, or should we just give Cleveland credit for doing what no other team had done before in the finals, in coming back from a 3-1 deficit?
It's always a combination of both, because whenever you're up 3-1 in a series, one locker room has their sights set on closing things up. The other locker room has half the guys thinking, well, look here, like, we got to start planning vacations, start getting cars shipped to summer spots, all that good stuff. So whenever somebody comes back from 3-1, it's a huge deal. Now, the way it took place with suspensions and momentum-shifting games and whatnot, it's one of the all-time great stories in the league because of everything that took place. You have a 73-9 win team that came back from 3-1 in the previous series to get to the finals and giving up the lead the way they did and how it took place. And, yes, you can make a case that they did choke away because Draymond Green, probably their most important player, gets suspended for game five. They lose that game. They go to Cleveland. Cleveland comes out to a big lead. Now you're in an all-or-nothing game seven, put themselves in a very bad situation. Golden State choked away. Cleveland also, pulled out the mat, put the rabbit out the hat. So it's a combination of both things. Why we play the game, it's why we always watch. It's how sports goes. But it's one for the ages, but also you got to give credit for Cleveland for not giving up. And that starts with their leader, yeah. LeBron James. That really starts with their leader. A lot of teams, we've seen all kind of playoff series and all kind of situations where team goes up 3-1, and that's all she wrote. But this team, they did not quit. They did not give up. They played hard on both ends, and they got the job done. And there's something to say about that because especially versus this team, the 73-9 team, a team that a lot of people call one of the best ever, all time, and they beat the Showtime Lakers and the 86 Celtics and all those other great teams, that's a huge accomplishment. Even though there were some injuries and whatnot, it's still a huge accomplishment. So a little bit of both, but you got to give credit to the Cavs, man. Even their coaching staff, Ty Lue coached his butt off. Especially the last few games, man, making better adjustments and, just getting the job done. So you got to give credit to the Cavs for staying mentally in it to the point where they gave themselves a chance.
Yeah, Jameson's right in the sense to where it's a combination of both. Look, this series really started to go into a downward spiral as soon as Draymond Green was suspended for Game 5. And, I said on this show, I said on my show, I said on the various shows that I appear on weekly, that when Draymond was suspended for Game 5, Cleveland instantly had new life because I did not like Golden State in Game 5 without Draymond, and I did not like Golden State in Game 6. Still, I gave Golden State the edge in Game 7 because this is a team that won 73 games and they had home court advantage, but when you have a player like LeBron James, all you can ask for is one game, and that's exactly what Cleveland got, and he was super in that one game. Now, what made Cleveland so potent in games 5, 6, and 7 was Kyrie Irving was pretty special. LeBron James was special last year in the NBA Finals. He was flirting with a triple-double each time out, and it was a fairly competitive series. Remember, it went 6 games last year. He didn't necessarily have someone that was a solid number 2 option offensively. There were times in this series where on Sunday night, Kyrie Irving was more efficient scoring the basketball, shooting the basketball than LeBron James. He shot a higher percentage, and that makes a world of a difference. Now, some of the aspects of this series that are not getting talked about enough is I was stunned at how bad Golden State actually missed Andrew Bogut. Anderson Varejao was horrible. Festus Ezeli, who was playing for a contract, was horrible. And really for Cleveland, Tristan Thompson was fantastic. And that's a guy that I've been highly critical of since he came into the league. And I think you got to go back to the 2010 NBA draft when Cleveland selected Kyrie Irving number 1. They got Tristan Thompson number 4. I thought that was a reach for Tristan Thompson at four. I thought they overpaid Tristan Thompson this offseason, and I still don't know if he's worth what they're paying him, but it did result into an NBA championship. A lot of things worked right for Cleveland. A lot of things worked against Golden State. From a Warriors standpoint, I look at Steph Curry, two-time league MVP, that was truly frustrated. Game 6 and 7 was not the Steph Curry that we watched put up one of the most historical offensive seasons in league history. That was not the same Steph Curry. Klay Thompson, who was my pick to be Finals MVP, was not good. He was, I can't even remember, I think he was 2 of 10 from the three-point line in Game 7, minus 11 when he was out on the court. He was not good. And, you know, there were glimpses, but every time Golden State something, you know, every time Golden State had a run, Cleveland had an answer. It was one of those cases where things really went right for Cleveland and a lot of things went wrong for Golden State, like Bogut going down, Andre Iguodala was back, Harrison Barnes, another guy that was playing for a lot of money, which he's still going to get paid, was not very good in this series. And also, you know, I think one aspect of this final series that isn't getting enough pub is let's look at the bench. In a perspective where Tyronn Lue was fantastic at making adjustments. Steve Kerr was probably out-coached games 5, 6, and 7. I saw adjustments coming from Cleveland.
Yep.
I saw minimal adjustments coming from Golden State. And on top of this is probably one of my biggest pet peeves, and I'm not taking anything away from Cleveland at all, because what we just witnessed is something that's never happened. He's coming back from a 3-1 deficit. The NBA has done a fantastic job of neutralizing the importance of depth in the NBA Finals by giving us 2 days off in between every game. And that's something that we can't stress enough, because 1 through 13, Golden State's the best team in the NBA. And you can't convince me that Cleveland has a better all-around team than Golden State. I know they just beat them in a 7-game set, but look, they're not better 1 through 13 or 1 through 12. They're just not. But the NBA has done a great job of neutralizing that depth that we have talked about all year long with Golden State when you were giving 2 days off in between each game. So a lot of things worked against Golden State. Tip your hat to Cleveland. LeBron James was phenomenal. He gave us a performance that was one for the ages. And Kyrie Irving, this was his time to shine. And I thought it was very fitting that Kyrie knocked down the right-wing three to give Cleveland the lead for good in the series. Everything just played into Cleveland's hands.
Klay Thompson and Steph Curry combined to go 12-36 in a game 7. Harrison Barnes, he made a couple threes, but outside of Draymond Green, no one really showed up the way they needed to in such a pivotal moment for the Dubs. For each of you guys, what does this summer look like in terms of their free agents? You know, obviously I'm talking about Barnes and Azeli in particular.
Well, if you're the Warriors, obviously you got to make some changes. You got to make some changes with your roster and the guys you're trusting. Obviously, your core is going to stay straight. Your big three of Steph, Clay, and Draymond, you're going to keep those guys. Those guys aren't going anywhere. But everyone else, there's questions about. Probably keep Livingston, too. He's a really good backup point guard. You don't really do anything with him. But, you know, the Bogut's, the Iguodala's, the Barnes's, the Azeli's, guys like that, they're not a guarantee to return, because, you know, the Warriors now are in a situation where they're playing for championships. There's no more getting back to playoffs, make it to the second round. They're a team that it's championship or bust in the next few years until Steph's prime runs out. So they're a team that's going to be looking to get better by addition. And the one biggest addition out there right now is Kevin Durant. He's a guy that they can go after. They have enough cap room because they have a lot of small contracts. They don't have a lot of max contracts on the books. I don't think they have any max contracts on the books. So right now, with the way things are looking right now, they can actually get Durant and move a couple guys and make things happen if need be. They're going to make a push for him. Don't know if he's going to go there, but they're going to make a push for him. I saw a report saying Dirk Nowitzki, I think he's a little bit too old for what they do, and he's another defensively challenged player. Don't really know if you want to bring that guy in. But they're going to kick some tires on a lot of different situations. I don't think they bring Harrison Barnes back. I just think, one, you can't afford for him to be the highest paid player on the team, and two, I don't think he's going to get better. And they have people that know way more about basketball than we all know about. They get paid a lot more than we do. But at the same time, you have to realize, you have to understand that when you're making an investment like that, you're counting on that player getting better. And I don't think Harrison Barnes is going to get better. I think he is who he is. And right now, he's a marginal starter at best. You can make a case he'd be better off coming off the bench the way he's been playing lately.
Yeah.
So right now, I think we see a new small forward in Golden State. And there's a good chance we see
a new center in Golden State. May not be a starter, but a guy that plays half the minutes because we know Bogut can't play a whole lot due to injuries and his body breakdown.
This is a really interesting summer. And again, fortunately for Golden State, they got the greatest basketball evaluator of all time in their corner in Jerry West. And I would expect these guys to come back on next season with vengeance. I mean, I expect most of the players on this team to be back. I disagree on the Harrison Barnes front. I understand you're going to have to pay this guy, but one of the biggest problems that Golden State is going to be faced with, and I think a lot of teams have this problem when you have a restricted free agent, one that has some sort of value. If Harrison Barnes brings in a max contract, it's very difficult to let somebody who is getting paid a max contract just walk away. Like, there's obviously interest in him from other teams. So I understand how that could handcuff you moving forward. But, you know, the way he just played, I wonder if he will get a max contract. And if he does, boy, he still holds a lot of value that you could use as a trade chip moving forward. So I don't think you let Harrison Barnes walk. I think you got to make sure you get at least something for him. Kevin Durant has got to be priority number one. I think that's an extreme long shot for them to get Kevin Durant. I think it's a long shot for anyone to get Kevin Durant outside of Oklahoma City. So where do you go from here? Well, you need a rim protector. I think that could definitely go a long way. You're going to have options out there as far as somebody that can protect the rim, as Jameson said, with, you know, 50% of the minutes is to what they just make Bogut so bad. And I was so surprised at what an impact that actually was, not having Bogut out there on the floor. For Golden State, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that maybe 9 guys are back on the team next year. That may be it. Festus Ezeli is gone. He's not coming back. I think that ship has sailed. It's unfortunate for Ezeli because if he puts up marginal numbers, if he's decent in Game 7 and Golden State gets the win, there's a good chance that he's rivaling Bismack out there this season for a contract, and that's just not going to be the case. It's an interesting summer, to say the least, for the Warriors. It's going to be fun to sit back and see what they do. This is one of the big, I think, misconceptions right now out there. Steph Curry is this young point guard with many years ahead of him. Look, I know that Steph Curry is one of the greatest shooters that we've ever seen. I've never put Steph Curry on the pedestal as being the best player in the NBA, and a lot of people disagree with me in that regard. But look, let's be honest, this guy's 28 years old, and we've talked about it on the show. We don't have to go back and really hash out every single injury that's occurred in Steph Curry's career. You have to win championships now. I'm just bringing that up because, again, look, you look at what the Clippers have in Chris Paul. There's a point guard whose window slowly is closing, and a lot of it has to do with a nagging knee injury. Steph Curry had a knee injury. He's had bad ankles, and he's 28 years old. You have to win, and you have to win now. Like I said, they have Jerry West in their corner. Expect Golden State to be back. They'll be the front runners again coming out of the Western Conference, and I would not be surprised if we see a rematch for the third consecutive year next season.
I wouldn't either, and we're going to get to that here in a second. But I you guys both make excellent points on them. The one thing I do want to just say for the audience out there, which of course we appreciate you tuning in each week, is like we need to. I do understand this is kind of how we consume the game these days, but folks need to stop with this like, oh well, see this is why he didn't deserve the like the MVP. Look, the regular season, Steph Curry was the best player in the league. He was. He was absolutely phenomenal, and and just because he was I'll say it, he was terrible in these finals, especially for his standards, especially compared to how he was in the regular season. We can't, we're not going to go back and discredit folks for the work that they've already done. That said, I can't disagree with you. The clock is ticking. It's just funny to me how quickly things can change in the NBA landscape. Sports in general, but in NBA in particular, it's funny because just a month ago we were probably or a month and a half ago or so everybody was talking about, and we all pretty much agreed, hey look, Golden State's not going anywhere for the next 5 years, like they're going to be this, they're going to be that, and it's just interesting because of course injuries and availability, it's the ultimate equalizer. You often speak to this, Jordan, it's the ultimate equalizer in professional sports. On Barnes, I'm just going to say it straight out. Barnes is not a max player. Even though he's going to get paid like one, he absolutely is not. I agree with Jameson. I think he's a marginal starter. I think and this is nothing against him. And for the record, as I always say, I'm pro labor. I'm always in favor of folks getting paid, so I'm not trying to take money out of that man's pocket. Go ahead and get your money. If my team were on the market for a small forward or a versatile player, he would not be the individual that I pay. I'm just going to be, I'll just leave it at that.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I agree with you. I agree with you guys in that regard. But losing him outright for nothing is a completely different story, and that's what they're facing.
Oh yeah, no. That 100% agreed. If I'm Golden State, you have to definitely. Look at that as like, you just can't let people walk, for nothing.
Nope.
But I'm talking, I'm speaking of like other teams that are looking, that are looking at him. I do realize that there's always a GM, there's always a coach that's going to say like, I can make that. I can make that work. And hey, I'd love to be able to say next year this time, hey, I was wrong on Harrison Barnes. Harry B, he did his thing for Charlotte or he did his thing for whomever. And if that's the case, I absolutely will. I don't necessarily anticipate that happening. If I'm Harrison Barnes, I'm going to be honest with you. I want to stay, with this team in Golden State, and I'm not going to sacrifice $20 and $30 million. But whatever it takes to kind of stay there, if I were him, I would do that. Because it's a whole different story when the bright lights are on you and you're supposed to be a number one option and you're playing for a team and everybody's looking at you like, hey, what is this? You cannot go 3 for 29 or whatever it was, in pivotal games for us in this series or in this season. But anyhow, and Azili, I agree. I think you both had the same thoughts on him. The dude has hands of stone. He doesn't finish consistently around the rim, and he doesn't defend the rim well enough on the other end. So, and again, I don't mean to be I don't mean to sound completely negative about it. It was just really shocking to me, to be honest with you, to see both of those two individuals in particular just not just underperform, but just not show up in the biggest moments when in actuality they could have literally solidified themselves as number and gotten seriously paid this summer had they just done anything to help their team when they needed it over those last three games. Won't pile on. I'll leave it at that. All right, so another couple things on this series. I know we always talk about how friendly the league is, these days, and how there's no quote-unquote rivalries. But after facing each other in back-to-back, finals, and I agree with you, Jordan, there's always a possibility that we could see these teams again. I actually love the fact that there's a little bit of drama, some trash talking back and forth. From Golden State's point of view, when things got hot, when the trash talking started, they kind of they got punched in the mouth and they didn't respond. So I'm intrigued to see what that looks like. What do you guys think about this as a budding rivalry potentially?
Well, I'll put it this way: whenever a team goes to something like this, down 3-1 or up 3-1, losing a series, they respond one way or another. Either they come back the next season, come back strong, or next season's gonna be rough. I think they'll be okay as long as they stay healthy. I think they'll be okay. Wouldn't surprise me if they have a San Antonio 2014 type of year where they come back, refocus, and get things back on track. Wouldn't be surprised by that. Really wouldn't. I think they've learned their lesson. At the end of the day, they're still a young team, even though we've seen these guys for a while. I believe this is a lot of the core outside of Steph. Steph's been in the league for years now, but like this is like Harrison Barnes and Draymond Green's fourth year in the league, and Draymond are this is a lot of guys 4th, 5th years in the league, and Clay Thompson 5th year in the league. So a lot of guys are still trying to figure things out. This is a lot of guys' first time really saying stuff in the media like this and it becoming real news. Like a lot of guys say stuff in the media and they comment and it's just another day. But this is the first time they've ever said anything and it became a story. And I think they're going to learn from that because LeBron's been his story.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron's been here, done that. He's been through this pretty much the last 15 years of his life. So he knows that whatever he says or does, he can live with that. I don't know if Golden State was ready for the backlash of the extra stuff that was going on. I think they got too caught up in the extra, this kind of, not when they forgot how to play basketball, but they got caught up in the extracurricular stuff way too much, whether it was Draymond with the extracurricular activities or with the trash talk in between games in the series. It's like they lost track of focus. They lost their focus and they got a little bit too confident and cocky before finishing the task at hand, and that ultimately cost them the series. But they, at the same time, I think they'll be back. I think they've learned their lesson. Sometimes it takes a bit of humbling before you're able to figure things out. I think the humbling just came at the wrong time for them. But, at the end of the day, everyone has to go through it one way or another. But they'll be back. As long as they're healthy, they'll be back. But this was one that you take a lot of lessons from. And honestly, I think they come back with a different focus. Even though they had a hell of a year this year, didn't finish off right, I think next year they come back focused, and it'll be more of a business-like
attitude instead of the – I don't think you'll see a lot of the shenanigans you saw after made shots and after big plays. I think it'll be more of a business-like attitude going forward from this court. They know what it takes to get it done. They've been here, and they like the success. I mean, hell, Draymond Green got more commercials than pretty much everybody in the league outside of LeBron and Kevin Durant. So those commercials are coming. You're not winning. They'll be back. They'll do whatever it takes for it to come back.
I want to agree with Jameson. Here's the problem with that. We were literally having this conversation, this exact same conversation in the Western Conference Finals. Because remember, it was Oklahoma City that had Steven Adams and Russell Westbrook step up. And when somebody punched Golden State in the mouth, I know they came back and they won three consecutive games in that series, but they were down 3-1. And OKC had them dead to rights. They wilted a little bit when somebody stepped up and punched them. And somebody stepped up and said, you know, basically told them, I don't care if you won 73 games or 82 games, it doesn't make no difference. The problem that I see with Golden State in that regard is that this postseason, it wasn't pretty. I mean, you have the injury to Steph in the Houston series. Jameson and I talked about this on my show last week. You go back to the Portland series. I know that series ended in 5, but Portland was very surprising in that series. And I think they exposed Golden State a little bit for the next two series that we would see. And it's part of the reason why I was so hesitant to just come out and say, yes, this is a Golden State series against Cleveland, because there's so many similarities between Dame Lillard and Kyrie Irving, and Dame had a lot of success in that series. In fact, Portland probably should have at least taken that series 6 games. So this wasn't necessarily an impressive run for Golden State, same team that was a buzzsaw throughout the regular season. Here's a question for you, though, that I think is really interesting. And hindsight's always 20/20. But I wonder what type of Golden State team we see in the playoffs if they don't win 73 games. Like, I wonder how much different from a mentality standpoint, not only from Golden State, but from the rest of the league. I wonder how different it is if they don't get to 73 wins. I think it's a little bit different. That target on their back grew by about 20 when they won that 73rd game. And now looking back on it, to me it means nothing. I know a lot of people say that's harsh. They still won 73 games, and it's a record that may not ever be touched. I don't care, because regular season team records mean nothing if you don't win an NBA championship. Like, that's what you play for. And I'm not being harsh against the Utah Jazz at all, but I'm going to use them as an example here. That's a team that I cover. And I go to an arena, and I see Western Conference championship banners hanging up. They don't mean anything. If you don't have a championship banner to go along with it, they don't mean a thing. And that's one of the things that taints the Utah Jazz from the late 90s, is they never won an NBA championship. And I'm going to use that same logic here with Golden State. In fact, it may be even worse than the New England Patriots when they went 16-0, because New England lost one game. This team lost 3 straight, 2 at home in the NBA Finals. 73-9 to me doesn't mean anything anymore.
You know, I understand your point, and, you know, to a certain degree, it probably will have that feel of, you know, I guess similar to those Seattle Mariners, and, you know, speaking of a crossover, you know, that one Seattle Mariners team, if I'm not mistaken, that won like 115 regular season games, and then, you know, obviously bombed out in the postseason. But I don't want to completely discredit them. That was a tremendous season. I don't want to say I disagree, but I don't agree wholeheartedly with you. That was a tremendous season, and I think it should still be acknowledged. But you're right. You know, like if you don't pay it off, it's at least a disappointment. It's one of those things that it's probably going to, you know, if you're a member of the Golden State Warriors and you're looking at yourself in the mirror right now, this is probably going to sting for a long time. It's going to sting at least until you get back out there, you know, this upcoming season and have some new memories, but it's got to be stinging. And that's also another reason why I really can't wait to see how both of these teams respond. Speaking of how both of these teams respond, and the last I'm going to ask, and I'll leave it as an open question, for each of you, on Cleveland's side. Now, everybody was questioning him. We talked about the mix. We talked about, you know, if Kevin Love was being used properly, which he clearly was not. But he looked, in my honest opinion, I was happy for Kevin Love in the last couple games of the series. The numbers weren't incredible, but in that game, you know, especially in that game seven, he did a lot of things out there that helped Cleveland win this victory. He had four, you know, if I'm not mistaken, he had 14 rebounds. You know, he had a few assists. He was doing a little bit of playmaking. I like the fact that he wasn't just standing around, you know, like on the outside. He was mixing it up, getting into the post, and actually, you know, showing you, you know, at least flashes of what we used to, you know, think was a Kevin, what we used to think was one of the league's top power forwards. So, would either of you be surprised if they still move forward and move him this summer?
Oh, absolutely not. They're a team that needs to get deeper. They need to create more depth of guys they can actually depend on. Because looking at the game last night, there's eight guys that played. And a couple of guys that came off the bench, Richard Jefferson, and who was the third? I can't think of the third guy off the top. His name escapes me. But they have guys that really – and Mo Williams is the third guy.
Yeah.
They don't have a whole lot of depth. And when you have a guy in Kevin Love that plays the same position as Tristan Thompson, and you can make an argument that he plays the same position as LeBron James, you have a lot of roster replication there. You need to kind of loosen that up and move one of those pieces to get some other guys to some other places. They have a lot of holes in that roster. If they want to repeat, it's going to be very difficult to do it with this exact roster again. Kevin Love's a good player. I still think his body isn't right. I think that I know he's had some back injuries and some leg issues in the past. He's a guy I don't see getting better. I don't see his game getting better as he ages. So if you're able to trade him, whether it's for a couple of young players or just guys that can provide some depth, some solid quality starters, you know, hey, you may have to do it. But at the end of the day, it's tough to not bring a team back to win a championship. It's very tough to say, hey, you know what? We're going to break this up. Personally, I think they should, because if they drop bad next year or someone gets hurt or whatever it may be, you're going to hear the rumors start flying. But I would definitely move Kevin Love now before his stock becomes really bad, because right now his stock's low. If he's the third option next year, I don't see his stock improving. So I would move him, create some more depth, and go from there.
Well, I can't say yay or nay to this until I know what LeBron James is doing. And the idea of LeBron leaving Cleveland just seems ludicrous. Seems so unrealistic. But I was wrong a couple of years ago. I didn't think there was any way he would leave Miami. I didn't think there was any way, because I looked at Miami as a team that would compete and win the Eastern Conference for as long as he and Dwayne Wade could walk. I thought that in the East, you know, being in the shape that it was in, and he still bolted. So I'm not trading Kevin Love unless I sit down with LeBron James and LeBron tells me, be real here. If LeBron tells you he's coming back next season, you have nothing to worry about. He plans on finishing his career in Cleveland. He doesn't want Kevin Love there. He thinks there are other aspects of this team that need to be improved. Then you go ahead and go with a trade. If you lose LeBron James, and let's just play worst case scenario here, you lose LeBron James. I don't know that you want to lose Kevin Love knowing that you have Kyrie Irving and Tristan Thompson right now. I still think that's a competitive team. They're not going to compete for an NBA championship, but it's a very competitive team still, especially in the East. That's a playoff team. That's a team that's probably competing for home court, barring some other free agency move, barring some other deals. So if I know that LeBron James is coming back next year, yeah, you can go ahead and trade Kevin Love if you think you're going to get something in return for him, because guess what? As long as you have LeBron James on your team, you're still a front runner in the Eastern Conference. Now, if LeBron's unsure of what he wants to do, I wait until I have that signed, you know, the ink dry on the contract stating that LeBron James is going to be in Cleveland next year before I move Kevin Love.
I'll say this. I was wrong as well when it comes to LeBron, you know, a few years ago. Many of us were. Let's be real about it. But it just seems so absurd to me, that he would leave this summer. You know, yes, I get the notion that, okay, he's fulfilled what he said, brought one to the land and all of that. But it would almost hurt that much more for those fans. And you know what? More than anyone else in this league, it seems like LeBron is in tune with, you know, his perception and as well as his legacy and what certain, you know, certain moves would mean for him. I know that this was an incredible, you know, legacy booster. Not only fulfilling his promise and, you know, going and winning the first, you know, like help, you know, obviously leading the, you know, the Cavaliers to their first franchise, you know, title, but the first championship of any, professional sports team in the city of Cleveland, if I'm not mistaken, since, 1950-something? But, you know, to me, it just seems kind of crazy, you know, for that to take place. We'll see, you know, we'll see how that goes. But as quiet as kept, I think Kevin Love's going to be on the market this summer. But that's also because, you know, to your point, Jordan, I do think LeBron is coming back.
Okay. I do too. But you got to make sure. You got to make sure before you do anything crazy.
No, absolutely. No, you're 100% right. Okay, so with the draft coming up, I wanted to address a couple of rumors related to both Los Angeles teams. Chad Ford of ESPN, you know, he sent some shockwaves around Twitter, you know, and sports radio last week by mentioning a trade rumor that surrounded the Lakers looking to move D'Angelo Russell potentially for a top five pick. I have a feeling we're going to have a difference of opinions on this one. But can either of you see them actually looking to make this move?
I don't see it. I really don't. I think they're kind of tied with D'Angelo Russell right now. They drafted him last year at number two, showed enough promise to pretty much keep him. I just don't see it. And if they wanted to make a move with Philly, I think they could make that move right now. I really do. If they really wanted that third pick, if they wanted to make a move for one of Philly's picks, I think they could do it. Not the number one pick, obviously, but if they want to make a move for, you know, Philly's picks and players, whatever they want to do, they can make that work. I just don't see it happen. I'll even be one better. I saw a rumor today where D'Angelo for number three is in place. Well, if there's a three-way deal between the top three teams in the draft and they wanted to pretty much all swap players and the Lakers end up with that third pick, that deal could probably get done. I just don't see it happening. I really don't. I think D'Angelo Russell actually has good value around the league, better than what fans and some people think. I think also want to give him a shot regarding this situation as well, with the new coach coming in and a new system that kind of favors his style. You want to give that a shot. You want to give that a go before you big moves, personally. But we'll see what takes place. I don't think they move him. If anything, I could see them maybe moving Clarkson. I could see a sign and trade involving Clarkson before I see them moving D'Angelo Russell.
There's always a better chance that Detroit's not going to go down than Detroit's going down. The thing is, I don't know. I mean, there's rumors out there, and I'm not that in tune with what's happening as far as the pre-draft process for the Lakers go. To me, it's a consensus number one from everyone that I've talked to here in this state. It's consensus number one in Ben Simmons, the consensus number two in Brandon Ingram, and then there's a significant drop-off from that point. But I've seen rumblings of the Lakers really being high on Chris Dunn. He's a guy that I think may be the most NBA-ready right now in this draft. I like him to be a top-five pick. I think that there's probably a good chance he ends up in Minnesota. But if they fall in love with somebody like Chris Dunn and you can bring back Dunn and an asset for D'Angelo Russell, if you feel that the relationship between Russell and everybody else that you're bringing back in that locker room is unrepaired, I can see the Lakers pursuing it. Also, I don't, you know, it kind of depends on the layout of Jim Buss's plan and Mitch Kupchak's plan here. Do you want to win now? Or are you looking to rebuild this team for the now? And if you're looking to rebuild this team for the now, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to trade D'Angelo Russell for a draft pick, because you're giving up on a guy that already has a year under his belt, and you're getting another project in return when we know what we expect from D'Angelo Russell. So this is really tough. I don't think they make it. I don't think this trade goes down. To me, D'Angelo Russell has all the potential in the world. I think he could be a very good player. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but again, it all depends on what plan that they have moving forward. Now, who's to say that the crazy rumor that Stephen A. Smith did a great job of starting today and spreading like wildfire over Twitter, that LeBron James would be in play to go to L.A., and there's a possibility that Kevin Durant could join him. I mean, that's a pipe dream that I don't believe will happen. I think I have a better chance of walking outside and getting struck by lightning than that happening. But the fact is, if that does happen, there's even more incentive there to move a guy like Russell. So it all just depends on the plan and what the organization has in place. I don't think it gets done, because, like I said, more often than not, we hear rumors and trades don't get done for one reason or another.
I'm going to be straightforward about this, and while I mean absolutely no disrespect to Stephen A. Smith or to any of the other, you know, professional individuals that are, you know, putting rumors like that out there, I'll say this. I think certain times we as commentators or analysts or journalists or whatever, you know, you may be, I think we put things out there at times because it's going to generate clicks, I think we put things out there at times because we know, you know, it sets up the next story. Because, like, say, for instance, you put that out there right now, and everybody is reading all of your stories, and you're making all the drops, and you're appearing on radio stations, and then you'll say when the free agency period comes up, and it doesn't take place, well, then you already have built in, oh, well, they didn't get it done again, and this, they failed in the room again, and I don't know. To me, it seems like, I'll be upfront, I think ESPN is guilty of this a lot. I don't want to say they manufacture the news, but I definitely think they massage it, so I'll leave that alone. Excuse me, the Jahlil Okafor rumors, you know, in my opinion, they were ridiculous for all the reasons we've discussed on this show in the past about the limitations of his game. But I do suppose, you know, this would have to be intriguing only if there are still question marks about Russell. But kind of, you know, honestly, you know, like Jameson, I don't necessarily see it happening. I do, you know, Twitter may say, oh, you know, D'Angelo is, you know, nobody wants to play with him. And sports radio may talk about how, you know, he's a bad this and that. Unless he's shown you something negative behind the scenes, something that, you know, would at least intimate that he just doesn't get it. If you're the Lakers, I'm sorry, I don't think you make this move. I personally think D'Angelo Russell is going to be a player in this league. He, you know, clearly has room to develop as a professional and obviously as a player on both sides of the ball. But I think he's shown enough. I think he definitely showed enough. And I was actually impressed with the poise that he showed down the stretch of last season under all of the scrutiny and given the fact that it was such a terrible season. Anyhow. Another rumor that was floated out there by Steve Kyler of BasketballInsiders.com was in relation to the Clippers essentially moving Blake Griffin for a bevy of picks from the Boston Celtics. Part of me thinks the Clippers absolutely need to consider shaking things up, but I'm not sure you look to do so for that youth as opposed to for another established players. What do you guys think?
Not with this draft. I mean, you don't get a bunch of picks in this draft for a guy that's an all-star player and a guy that sells tickets and whatnot. Boston's obviously looking for that top 20 player. That's going to come in and, you know, be a star player for them right away. They've been looking for that guy for the last couple of years. They have not been able to sort of trade for that. Well, with that being said, there's just no way the Clippers can do that. Not right now. They have one season left with this current core of Chris Paul at the point, J.J. Redick, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan as their core. They have one more year of all those guys on their contract at the same time. So they're not going to really break that up over picks. Now, if they could have got a rotation player back and some picks, or a starter and some picks, then maybe you're talking. But right now, there's no way that they're going to trade Blake Griffin for draft picks only unless he has something wrong with him. Like, other than that, there's no way you trade that guy for picks, because now if you trade him for picks, you might as well trade Chris Paul too, because there's no way he's going to come back after next season. So, yeah, it's just rumors right now. Things get flown out for whatever reason it is. But Blake Griffin he's more valuable than some picks in the draft that we don't know if it's even that good.
Well, I don't know how to say this without being kind. This core is not winning a championship. They're not. This Clipper core right now, they're not going to win a championship. Any way you want to slice it or dice it, they had their opportunities. They're getting older. They're getting more and more predictable. I haven't been impressed with some of the moves of the front office. This particular core is not going to win an NBA championship. And it's unfortunate because if you had the core like 3 years ago, I think a guy that would be perfect for the Clippers would be Jaylen Brown. But I don't know how long it's going to take Jaylen Brown to develop. That's obviously a hole that the Clippers have. Would I give up Blake Griffin for that? No, I wouldn't. I mean, but you have to start examining and exploring your options, because I don't think Chris Paul comes back after next season. This team's not going to win a championship. They're not a top three team in the Western Conference right now. They may not even be a top four team by the time free agency settles this upcoming summer. So the Clippers are in a situation where you may want to act now, because the problem the Clippers may run into is that they are still the second show in Los Angeles. They will always be the second team in Los Angeles. But you're going to start running the risk of losing talent without getting anything in return. And the bad thing about that was you were spoon-fed Chris Paul. Let's call it what it is. They were spoon-fed Chris Paul. You can't start losing talent for nothing. And the Clippers are running the risk of that if they don't start winning, which is not going to happen, or if they don't start pulling moves and developing assets for players that they have now that are just about towards the end of their prime. Interesting time frame right now for the Clippers.
Yeah, you know, they haven't had a small forward, a starting level small forward, in I don't know how long. So part of me, I understand why, you know, Doc, especially immediately after the season, he couldn't come out and say like, yeah, we're gonna start to break things up and, you know, and look to shake things up with this roster, especially given the fact that you just lost, you know, your two best players, you know, to injury in that series. But part of me feels like you absolutely have to consider all options. Now, that doesn't mean you have to take this, you know, like a deal of this nature from the Celtics, but I found it interesting that a lot of Clippers fans that I interacted with on Twitter, by the way, shameless plug, I'm Jabari Davis NBA on Twitter. Jameson is the Jameson, and Jordan is at Jordan_DTS. But a lot of the folks that I, you know, interacted with on Twitter that, you know, are, you know, diehard Clipper fans, they had no desire to make any type of deal. And it didn't seem as though they were interested in moving any of their top four players. I just wonder how they're actually going to do that. It's not like they have all the cap space in the world. And, you know, if you're Doc Rivers and, you know, you're basically the de facto GM, at a certain point, you just have to get out of the first and second round. Like, you can't – Jordan mentioned it. They were spoon-fed Chris Paul. They kind of, you know, they've got a lot of talent out there on the court. But at a, you know, to a certain degree, they've been, you know, they're a disappointment each year. Like, you know, the last 3 years we've gone, you know, a lot of us have mentioned them as, hey, well, the Clippers may be a dark horse out there in the Western Conference, especially, you know, right behind those other guys, you know, those top two or three teams. Look, I'm gonna call a spade a spade. The Clippers have been disappointing over the last few seasons. And if, you know, I guess if you bring them, you know, bring the band back together for one more year and make a run at it, you know, that, you know, I understand that. But to both of your guys' point that you kind of made earlier, the clock is ticking, and you just never know, you know, how long an actual championship or, you know, quasi championship window is going to be open.
I'll do you one better. Their clock is over. In the Western Conference, when you have the Warriors, the Oklahoma Thunder, San Antonio Spurs, their clock is already at midnight, and they're on extra time right now. Their time is over. Like, it is. They had their chance was 2 years ago when they had OKC on the ropes and they let them off the hook. They had OKC, you know, game five, they were up by 700 minutes ago, and they lost that game in regulation. When they lost that game, that was their final. That was their best shot of doing anything, and they lost that game, and they've never been the same since. Not going to go to last year about the Rockets series because they weren't going to beat Golden State in the conference finals anyway. But that year before was their shot. They didn't win it, and they have not been the same team since. And it's just not going to happen. Their core just isn't good enough. When you look at teams in the West that are contenders, their core isn't better than Oklahoma State's. Definitely not better than Golden State's. And you can make an argument that's not better than San Antonio's. So with that being said, their run is pretty much over, but you don't trade your players for draft picks. Like, that's one thing. Like, unless you're getting a top two pick, you don't trade your all-star player for a bunch of draft picks in a draft that a lot of people are down on. But, they're going to need to make something happen. It's going to be interesting to see what takes place because they should make moves, but is Doc too stubborn to make them? That's the biggest question this summer for them.
Another couple things here on the draft. You know, Philly, they kind of gone back and forth with Ben Simmons talking about, oh, you know, they may be considering Brandon Ingram, you know, after all. And then once, I think, you know, it was reported that Simmons, while he didn't work out for him, he did officially meet with the team, and now it seems as though they're going there. Ben Simmons is going to be the number one pick in the draft, right?
He kind of has to. I mean, he's the guy that if you pass on him and he comes to be great, you regret it for the rest of your life. He's just not the guy you pass up. Brandon Ingram, I think, is going to be a fine basketball player in this league. May even be better than Simmons. But if Simmons is the number one guy in this draft, like, that's just how it is. But he's going to be number one. Ingram's going to be number two. Number three is the biggest question in the draft, in my opinion. What happens at three, whether Boston trades a pick or they pick somebody, whomever it may be, there's so many different candidates at three that you can list to go on. And that, to me, that's the biggest mystery in the draft. But number one definitely isn't a mystery. I mean, Chris Dunn can go three, Jalen Brown can go three, Buddy Hield can go three, Jamal Murray can go three, Drogon Bender can go three. There's a lot of guys there's like four guys that can go three, and we wouldn't be surprised at all. So that, to me, is the biggest mystery. But the top two picks, we know what's going to happen.
You gave me a perfect transition because this was the last one, and it's a setup for each of you. Tell me, give me one surprise that you anticipate taking place in the upcoming draft. Obviously, the draft is this coming Thursday.
Something brewing from beneath the surface. Be aware of two teams in particular, that's Boston and Utah, because both of those teams have a lot of assets. And it's gotten to the point, at least for Utah specifically, you cannot continue to stockpile players. You just simply can't do it. you're going to have to make a move, especially with a team that is really set up well. Devin Quincy's done a terrific job in the GM role, but you have a lot of draft picks. And we watched Utah trade a couple of second-rounders for Sheldon Mack this past trade deadline because you have so many of them. So does Utah really need that pick at number 12? No, because at this particular spot, you got a guy like Jakob Poeltl who's probably going to be around that 11 to 12 spot. That's going to be a name that a lot of people in Utah are going to want Dennis Lindsay to pull the trigger on. If that's the case, Utah is going to have to make a move with someone that's already established on their roster like Derek Favors, and that's a name that we have brought up multiple times here on the show. So keep an eye on Utah and Boston, two teams that have a group of draft picks, and speaking of trading players for draft picks, Danny Ainge dealt a shell of Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce and Jason Terry, and because of it, he's got pretty much Brooklyn's draft for, you know, the past 3 years and again this year. So Boston has a lot of picks that they can move. They got a lot of assets as well. Those are two teams that are in the best spot to either move up or move down in this draft, depending on if they want to collect even more assets. Those are the two teams to watch. Dragan Bender is really intriguing for Boston at number 3. And maybe one of the most interesting players in this draft is the National College Player of the Year, Buddy Hield, because I can see him going anywhere from like 4 to 10. I can see him fitting in a lot of different spots. I hope he doesn't end up in Sacramento. I don't want to see Buddy Hield go there, but it's a very realistic possibility that that's where he goes. He could go anywhere from 4 to 10. It's a toss-up from that point. Jaylen Brown's another guy that I brought up. So there's a couple of interesting players, three that I just named, Bender, Brown, and Hield. But the two teams that you have to keep an eye on is the Celtics and the Jazz, because hands down, they have more assets than anybody else in the league.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point, Jordan. I'm going to go a little bit different. I'm going to go with the players that are going to be selected in the first round from the schools they're coming from. The University of Washington is going to have two guys in the lottery. Marquise Chris and DeJounte Murray are going to be in the lottery. They're going to be selected in the lottery. UNLV is going to have two guys in the first round. UNLV had one of the worst seasons, very disappointing seasons this past year. But Patrick McCall and Steven Zimmerman are going to go in the first round. I'm going to go one bigger. Thon Maker will be a top 20 pick in this draft. He's a guy that a lot of scouts like. A lot of crazy stories from, moving around a lot and all kinds of different things, being eligible, being ineligible, all this, that, and the third. He's going to be a top 20 pick. The skill set's too good with the league the way it is right now, the way things are right now, the fertility and the big shooting and being able to rebound and block shots at 7-1. I'll put it this way. He's going to be a top 20 pick. There's going to be some team out there falls in love with him. That's just how it is. And other than that, I think we also get a surprise in the top 10. I love this game. I didn't think he was this good. I know that he was, looked at and paired as a really good player. I thought he was a bit of a sleeper, but Arvydas Sabonis, the son from Gonzaga, is a very good ball player. At the round of the tournament time, I thought he would be a late first, mid to late first. He's probably a top 10 guy now, and that's going to be the reality of it. I don't know if he's top 10 good, but he's a very good player for somebody. He's going to be a good pickup for somebody, but top 10 may be a little too high.
James, I started to laugh a little bit because you kind of stole my thunder. That's exactly where I was going in terms of Thon Maker. I kind of look at it like, remember a few years back when it was Boston that selected that kid out of Brazil, that literally all we had was some grainy footage of some lanky, wild-haired kid. It was Lucas Nogueira. He was picked with the 16th, he was picked at number 16. I mentioned on a couple shows over the last couple weeks about Thon Maker in particular, how it would, if you're the Lakers, how it would be great if he's still around at the number 32, especially as a project. I agree with you. I 100% agree with you that that's going to take place. I think there's going to be at least one GM in those top 20 picks. To be honest with you, if I'm not mistaken, I think Phoenix has three picks in the top 20, or at least three in the top 25 or so. There's going to be a team that reaches up and grabs him. So in terms of the overall draft, you can get plenty of draft coverage from several different sites, of course, including BasketballInsiders.com, Draft Express, and various others. But I just wanted to kind of touch on some of those scenarios as well as some of those rumors. We've got the NBA free agency coming up next week, so we'll definitely do a full show on that, and we'll actually probably have a few guests lined up for that one. But before we get out of here today, let me go ahead and get your final shots.
All right, mine is very simple. You know, we just finished the NBA season. It was a pretty good season. A lot of ups, a lot of downs. A lot of things happened. History was made, all that good stuff. I'm going to give, you know, just a little thought here. People got to stop listening to other people who only watch one game a week of basketball or two games a week or only follow the box scores. All right, there's a lot of people out there. I'm not going to name any names because that's not what we're here to do. There are a lot of people out there that are masquerading as someone important, but they don't watch basketball. It's evident by the way they tweet and the way they think of the game. That's how it is. People have to watch the game. And this week, this Thursday, when this draft comes on, there's a lot of people who are going to make comments about guys they really never saw play in college, but maybe a tournament game or maybe an NIT game or maybe a weird preseason tournament out in Maui or something like that. If you're getting your advice from people who aren't covering that team or don't know basketball, be very careful and listen to insight from that person. A lot of these people are very fraudulent with their stuff that they're providing. There's a lot of good kids out there that are going to get picked up. A lot of surprise kids, guys that stayed in school for 3 or 4 years, they're going to be good players, but a lot of people don't know about them because they don't watch basketball. Be very, very careful who you get your information from and who you listen to and who you follow.
That's an excellent point. And, you know, to that point, I raise my hand right here, and I tell you, I don't watch college basketball. I watch the tournament. That's all. And I don't even pay all that much attention to it. I'm looking at the top names. I cover the NBA, and obviously, you know, they're specialists, you know, for everything, you know, from the, you know, the college transition to the NBA, you know, and beyond. But that's exactly why I look for, you know, I look for the expert. And to your point, there are an awful lot of folks that are masquerading as quote unquote experts, but it's very clear, you know, that they haven't watched the kid develop, they haven't watched the kid, you know, throughout his career. They're probably just basing those opinions on, you know, what social media, you know, other individuals on social media are saying. So you definitely have to be careful, you know, when it comes to especially around the draft, when it comes to people's, you know, analysis. All right, Jordan, let me get yours.
Yeah, my final shot, I'm gonna gear it towards one particular player that I am definitely, definitely excited to see get drafted on Thursday, and that's Gary Payton Jr. And the reason I want to bring up Gary Payton Jr. is because my particular line of work, I am a play-by-play announcer for a junior college basketball team that shares the same conference with where Gary Payton Jr. began his junior college career. That was at Salt Lake Community College. The first time I watched this guy play, of course, there's a lot of intrigue because it was Gary Payton's son. He was also sharing the backcourt with Tyrone Corbin's son. So that was a team that was garnering a lot of attention in the JUCO ranks. I pay close attention to the JUCO ranks for obvious reasons. Freshman season, I look at Gary Payton, and I remember turning to my color guy and saying, that kid's a project. There's a reason why he's playing junior college basketball. Later on that season, you started seeing the athleticism of Gary Payton Jr. take over games, and the court vision and the jump shot was improving. His sophomore season, Salt Lake Community College, this kid was a phenomenal basketball player, and he was making his team better, everyone around him, making them better, and they were perennial national championship contenders. And then he goes to Oregon State, and being the radio station that I work at, I have to cover a Pac-12 squad in Utah. We're a Pac-12 affiliate, and so I got to watch him continue to build up at Oregon State, Pac-12 newcomer of the year, his junior season. And now you look at Gary Payton Jr. off of what he built his senior season, getting to the NCAA tournament with Oregon State. Boy, it's been a lot of fun. Going deep into the Pac-12 tournament, it's been a lot of fun watching this guy kind of develop throughout, you know, the last 4 years of college. So he's an individual that I'm going to be sitting down watching. I'm anxiously awaiting where he goes in the NBA draft because it has been fun to watch him develop over the past 4 years. And really, in the going on 7 years that I have been a play-by-play announcer for this JUCO squad, really the only player that I've been able to sit and watch for 4 years and watch him develop, and it has been fascinating from my perspective. So I'm really curious to see where he goes, and I'm definitely pulling for Gary Payton Jr. to make a name for himself at the next level.
I can certainly appreciate that, and I'd love to see Gary Payton Jr. obviously do well at this level. He's going to have to improve as a three-point shooter, you know, especially at the NBA distance as well. But, you know, he is a guy that can do a lot of things out there on the court. So, I mean, you know, I'm intrigued to see how he transitions into the league. All right, guys, fantastic show this week. I appreciate your time. For listeners out there, we definitely will have a show previewing free agency, as I mentioned a bit earlier. You know, stay tuned for that. That will kind of stack it with different guests from, you know, that cover the league and, you know, really get into it. So for Jameson Welsh and Jordan Busserini, I'm Jabari Davis, and this has been another episode of your Triple Threat Podcast.